Hello and welcome to Transformative Taskmaster, the podcast by fans, for fans, and about fans. This week, TK has horn section saxophonist Mark Brown in the virtual studio. He's here to set the record straight and talk about music, the horn section TV show, and appearing on Taskmaster.
We'll just cut all of this out, I guess. But welcome, Mark Brown, to the transformative. Okay, yeah. Well, welcome to the Transformative Taskmaster podcast, Mark Brown of the Horn Section.
Hello.
Hello. So we already recorded with Joe a while ago, and then we got a message from you, basically saying, hey, I've watched the first 10 minutes of Joe's episode, and there's already several things wrong with this.
Yeah,
so we're here to
set... I can't remember what it was now.
The record straight. I think it was the how did the horn section come to be question. Because from what I understand... He said something like, him and Ben... And you had been gigging together, and him and Ben and Alex obviously had kind of grown up together, and so they always kind of had this.
Yeah. So the way I remember it, Joe and I were living together then, nearly, I think, and Ben was in our little. We'd just graduated college, and we were doing postgrad jazz studies, and all playing together in different little jazz bands. And then we all got a gig up at the Edinburgh Festival playing jazz in a big band. And we went up and played. And then Alex was doing stand-up, one of his first stand-up shows. And we all went to see that because they knew him, obviously. Mm-hmm. And and then that kind of went on for a couple of years, 3 or 4 years, where we were all there at the same time. Alex would come and see our gig. We would go and see him do stand-up, usually with Tim Key. And then we met Watson and all those other people at the same time. And there's a big, you know, basically post all the shows in Edinburgh, there's this amazing hang for all the comedians and all the musicians, and it's really fun. Mm-hmm. And you stay up all night and you get drunk in Scotland and it's brilliant, and then you all have to go and do your show with a massive hangover. And it becomes just a relentless thing. Mm-hmm. It's brilliant, you know, it's the best time you can have, especially we're all in our early 20s.
Yeah.
So it was magic. And that's how we all met. And then after like 10 years of that, we kept saying we should do something. Mm-hmm. So I got Alex a gig at Ronnie Scott's because I run a residency at Ronnie Scott's, which is the leading jazz club in the UK in London. Mm-hmm. And Alex came down and did like a 10-minute slot there, and he did beatbox.
Beatbox.
Through the amazing house PA, mm-hmm, at Ronnie's, and just, you know, playing in a music venue is so different from playing in a comedy venue. At that time for Alex was like upstairs in a pub, or right, you know, there's people, yeah, going to the bar and there's noise, and Alex's humor doesn't cut through like a Larry comedian would. Do you know what I mean?
He was
still really good and doing his thing, but it was doing it in a listening crowd, mm-hmm, with the detail of the perfect PA. He really loved that.
Yeah.
So that's when we really got going and made it happen. Mm-hmm. So then after that, he went away and he just booked the Edinburgh run. So that must have been the end of 2009, I think. Mm-hmm. And then he booked an Edinburgh run for 2010. And then we did like maybe 6 months of warm-up shows. Not many, but over those 6 months, we maybe did one or two a month to get stuff together. Mm-hmm. A lot of it was improvised. Gradually, we chipped away at it and got a few songs together. Oh, that's right. He said the ending song was Sidemen, which is not true. So the end song was Friends Forever, which was a song where we found two randoms in the stage. Uh-huh. In the crowd.
Yeah.
And made them out to be best friends. And we wrote that song as we went through the show.
Yeah.
So when Alex was doing a bit, someone would have 5 minutes to throw some rhymes together.
Yeah.
And we had a basic structure. And by the end of the show, we had that song written about these two people in the crowd. And it was kind of, mm-hmm, a really good ending to the show. So we had like a solid start to the show, a good end to the show. In the middle, it was varying success of improvisation stuff with comedians.
But, right.
Yeah.
That sounds really fun.
It was brilliant fun. And it was at midnight.
Mm-hmm.
After all the comedians had done their solo shows, which are all really stressful things for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then everyone would come and it was an outlet of just a joyous thing where people had something new to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great. But, you know, there was queues around the block. We could have done double shows every day.
Yeah.
It really hit.
Nice.
Hit the ground running. And by that time, Alex had been doing it for almost 10 years, I think,
mm-hmm.
on his own.
Yeah.
So he had a little residual following, and because Tim was always going to be there. I mean, Tim did nearly every night.
Mm-hmm.
And then that cachet of them two doing it brought bigger names down, basically.
Yeah.
It was brilliant.
What month does the Edinburgh Comedy Festival happen?
August.
Oh, okay.
It's 3 weeks.
I studied in Edinburgh for a semester in college, but it was in the spring semester, so January through May. So I would have missed it anyway. Yeah. But
I mean, it's so good. I mean, Edinburgh obviously is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of they don't get great summers by any means, but if the sun comes out in Edinburgh, everyone's like, "Oh my god, the sun's out!"
Yeah,
it's like, "What?"
Yeah.
So then it has this magical thing of people who really wanted to make the most of it and get out and about, and
mm-hmm.
there's something like, I think it's like 25,000 different shows are on during those 3 weeks.
That's nuts.
Because it starts like, the shows start at 9 a.m. and they mm-hmm. finish at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
And it's just every hour there's something amazing to see.
Mm-hmm.
And people come from all over the world. It's got slightly bad press at the moment because it's so expensive now to go and do it.
Right.
It's difficult to go and make any money from it.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult to not make a massive loss at the moment, to be honest. There's a finite amount of places to stay, so mm-hmm. they can charge whatever they want,
right? Yeah,
and that means acts can't afford to do it at the moment. But
yeah, that's fair.
I don't know but it is a brilliant thing.
Yeah. Do you remember? Because I asked Joe this, and he didn't really seem to remember. Did the name for the horn section? Do you remember who came up with that? Because like, it's very funny. And it works really well that Alex's last name is Horn, and obviously, like, horn section, you know, in a jazz band.
I think it's an Alex thing where we sort of went around a few more abstracts. It was so obvious.
Yeah.
That it was, because Joe and I were playing in a horn section all the time anyway, doing an Elvis show and a blues guy show we used to do. So we were in a horn section all the time, and then Alex horn section. Basically, Alex was like, well, it's Alex horn section, isn't it? And then we sort of thought, it can't be that easy.
Yeah.
And we went around a few other bits and bobs trying to be clever and funnier. But realistically, it just makes sense. You know, it's kind of a no-brainer just to go along with it.
Right. Yeah, very funny. Now, you are known in the horn section as the saxophone player, but you actually started on clarinet early on, and then you switched to sax to get more into jazz. So, mm-hmm. and then you've pretty much been gigging since like your teens, and then you went to uni for sax and clarinet and also composition. So it's pretty cool that you've been able to just play your instruments for a living, because normally as a woodwind player, you have to learn how to play a ton of instruments for like a pit orchestra. So did you also have to do that, or did you basically just get to choose what instruments you wanted to learn?
So the courses I did and stuff, when I did like a straight degree, like a classical degree first, which was what I did it. I started that on clarinet and then switched to saxophone halfway through. Purely because I realized while I was studying this classical, what I was actually doing was playing jazz all the time at night. So I was like, it's kind of stupid me practicing 8 hours a day on clarinet and then going to play the saxophone the whole time, because I suppose it's classical, I'm sure. So I was like, I can finish this degree on by being a bit more jazzy and doing some classical sax repertoire. The classical sax repertoire isn't as expansive and amazing as the clarinet repertoire, but I knew I didn't want to do that anyway, so it was just a means to an end. So I did that, and then I did postgrad study, and I was just studying jazz then. And at that point, they were like, look, if you want to be a pit player, you do need to learn to play the flute. And I tried and I just can't do it. I mean, I have a flute and I can get a note out of it, but it's so difficult.
Yeah.
And I just haven't needed to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't done it. Well, I think if I had to, I would.
It's funny because as a trumpet player, the flute was the easiest instrument, easiest wind instrument for me to learn. I don't know why that is, but
I think there's something to do with the way the diaphragm's used for the flute and the trumpet is the same.
Yeah.
Because I've got really good flute playing friends who can play really killing high trumpet.
Oh.
And it's, I don't know why that is. It's something to do with also the embouchure.
Yeah,
size.
I bet
like the aperture of your embouchure is like something the same. But a good, like a jazzy sax thing, it's quite a loose embouchure and a strong diaphragm. It's the opposite to what you need on a flute. And I've just always found it, like, I think if you start on flute and then move to sax, it's fine. But because I start on clarinet and move to sax, it's difficult to do it that way.
Right.
And you have to set aside a whole year to get it together. And I just haven't needed to do it, so I haven't.
Right, yeah. Plus,
and I can't really bear, I don't can't really bear being in a pit in a musical.
Do you just not like musicals?
I don't really like musicals. Yeah. I mean, I'd love to write a horn section musical. That's my main ambition.
Oh,
but
it's exciting.
To actually sit in a pit and just play the same music over and over again without any...
Yeah.
Anything different is a little bit like purgatory to me.
Yeah, as a jazz player, I can definitely see how you would hate that. Meanwhile, I am not a jazz player, and I love playing in pit orchestras.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I haven't done it for so long. I'd probably quite enjoy it now.
Yeah,
but I did it maybe 15 years ago where I was stepping on a show, and they're all outstanding players, but they're reading a book and then they play their bit.
Yeah,
and then they're all doing their accounts and they play their bit, and it's like this isn't very musical.
Yeah, no, like, I know
it's called a musical, but it's the least musical thing I've ever seen in my life. Right. It's like doing data entry or something.
Yeah. Now, in drum and bass, there's a little tiny flute part. So did you get somebody else to do that, or was that you?
No, I played that.
Okay. It's just like a little trill.
But
it's
like...
Sounds good.
Many takes.
Oh, no.
Well, there's another one with flute on recently. Oh, I tell you what it is. It's in series 2 of the sitcom.
Yeah.
I play flute on that. And I was surprised by how good it sounded when I was releasing this album for series 2.
Yeah.
Which will come out at the end of series 2, one of the tunes has flute on that, and it sounds like a professional flute player. I was amazed.
Nice. That's good. Now, when you were recording the TV show, and obviously it's been a couple years, but did you, and this is another thing that I mentioned to Joe, was that as a musician, you can tell whether somebody on the screen is actually playing their instrument or not, because you get actors all the time that are like, they're clearly not playing the guitar or the violin or whatever. Now, obviously, you guys know how to play your instruments. So when you were recording the TV show, were you actually playing in those scenes, or did you just kind of have to fake it and then record later?
So it's a combination of both. And we like went back and forth with this so many times. So all the rehearsal room stuff is played live. But that was making it really difficult for the director and producer to edit it.
Right.
So they really wanted the bits that are filmed on the fake TV set to be mimes, so then they can chop it to cut to funnier takes or whatever.
Yeah.
So in the first series, there's quite a lot of playing live in that setting, which was such a nightmare to edit that for the second series, we've simplified it a bit. So we mimed most of the stuff in the, I mean, it depends on what scene you're looking at, but if it's in the TV, Alex's house TV studio set, basically, that thing, we're miming those.
Okay.
And the rehearsal room's all played live. If we're playing on our own, it's generally played live. So there's, like, if Joe's playing the banjo, there's a bit when Joe and I just play. If it's just two of us, maybe we'd do that live. So yeah, it's a combination, basically. And it had to, ultimately, it was done on a budget, and it was, you know, it's about saving time in the edit as much as anything. So that, yeah, it's hard. And then some of them are live vocals and some of them aren't. But the beauty of recording it in Imogen Heap's house is she has a recording studio in the basement. So when we were on set, we were able to record in a really, like, you know, a grinding studio time, which was that's why that place was so incredible. And then when the special guests came in, so Kyle and Stevie, who had to sing, we could just take them downstairs and record their vocal on site,
mm-hmm.
which is amazing.
So then did you do those before the scene that they were in so that you could just, like, they could press play on the recording largely, and you could just kind of mime along with
it? Yeah, but that often, it depended on their schedule. We generally got those guys maybe 2 or 3 days, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So we would try and put in a half day to record that at the start of the day. And then they would go off and film, but also they were being pulled into makeup at the same time and costume and all that. It was crazy.
Yeah.
But you know, it would have been impossible to do it if we were at that site, because it was just, you know, you'd have to take them to an actual studio and book out a whole other day with them.
Yeah.
And that makes scheduling even more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was brilliant. So you know, we're there in, like, Imogen's got this amazing studio which has loads of great gear. She's got her Grammys from Taylor Swift albums on the shelf and stuff. It's like, it's amazing. It's a really inspiring place.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, that's really convenient that there was just a recording studio in the basement. Magical. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So
not like a laptop. It's a proper brilliant studio with ways and desk and everything.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, obviously, like, the proper actors, you know, you said were being pulled away for makeup and costumes and stuff. How much of that did you guys have to do? Because I know you had like a brief acting tutorial lesson or whatever, but other than that, like, you pretty much just got to wear your horn section outfits and
I mean, there's hair and makeup every day, but we were only, you know, it was like 10 or 15 minutes. So because we were there most days, we just had to be there early and get it done.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's really fun being there anyway, and we wanted to be there to answer any questions. Alex was so busy because he's rewriting it. He's in most scenes.
Mm-hmm.
It was useful for the rest of the crew to have other people on hand that we could sort out. We could be recording music, for instance, or setting up other scenes or whatever at the same time. So we were there most days anyway, and our, you know, costumes and makeup was it happened, but it happened within 20 minutes at the beginning of the day. That was it, really.
Right. Well, there is a promo image, I think, for series 2 that has all of you in makeup and painted nails and big flowery, like, so obviously that would have taken a little bit longer, but whose idea was that for that scene?
So that's, I think that came from Babs, the director, Barbara Wiltshire. Because we sent them the songs.
Mm-hmm.
And that song is Shit Show, which is the closer of the first episode, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And she wanted to be over the top. And it's like it's in Alex's fantasy mind. Actually, that is one of the only days we did away from Imogen's house.
Mm-hmm.
So that's in a theatre in Stratford.
Oh, cool.
And so that day was different because it was the whole... No, maybe it was just half a day. No, it was the whole day we did there. So they had to then... That was, you know, had to take everything down in caravans and stuff and Winnebagos and everything to do, like a proper mobile shoot. So it was a really fun day.
Nice.
And I got two of my mates, dancer mates, to choreograph it.
Oh, nice.
Zoe and Josie, I'll give a shout out to.
Yeah, awesome.
They were brilliant.
Sweet. Yeah. That's fun. So on the TV show, what's it like being a fictionalized version of yourself?
I mean, I'm so close to the fictionalized version.
You're like, yeah, there's no difference. Far off.
I can't really see any difference. It's like just me on a bad day.
Right.
So
it's grumpy Mark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically. I'm like, yeah, fine, I can do that. I think the only ones that had to really go away, and Joe's kind of similar on screen, really. I think Ed has to be a little bit different on screen, and Ben's kind of so over-enthusiastic on screen.
Mm-hmm.
He's maybe acting a bit more, but I felt there's very not much acting from me, really.
Right. Well, that's convenient.
It's kind of just, it was just indulging what I think. It's that thing of like, you can just, oh my God, if I could be like this all the time, it'd be amazing. Well, obviously, then you've actually got to be in real life and not be horrible to people the whole time.
Man, what a bummer.
Oh, no, yeah, it's terrible.
Oh, that's funny. I guess I shouldn't say bummer. That's an American thing, isn't it?
Well, no, I mean, it's...
Well, you know what I mean. You know what
bummer.
I mean.
Yeah.
Bummer. So I know that there are... So recently, I think a couple of weeks ago or something, the horn section released more songs on Spotify, coming soon to Bandcamp, like because of the upcoming season of the Horn Section TV show. Yeah. And I know that there's going to be another album coming out also because of the second season of the Horn Section TV show.
Yes, so essentially it's a soundtrack album. It's kind of a promotional tool, but also it's to collect all the songs from Series 1 onto one thing so they're not dotted on different albums.
And yeah.
There's a couple of new versions on there. There's like Chinese Five Spice, I think, is live from the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some slightly different versions. Or there's some where Alex is singing and he doesn't sing them on the originals. Or there's versions where Alex sings it in the TV or it's actually Will or whoever sings it on the mm-hmm. on the actual thing.
Yeah.
And I just don't think they've been... Also, I'll tell you what, in a more musical way, they all were mixed again. So it's like a remix mm-hmm. of everything because they were mixed for TV and slightly better versions, I think, mm-hmm. of some of them. And then Series 2 is just... Yeah, so for instance, Little Seasons is on there, but it's Kyle singing that with Will.
Nice.
And then If I Were is on there, and that's me singing that with Stevie.
Uh-huh.
So they're all very slightly different versions of what people have heard before.
That's
so
cool. Yeah.
And then yeah, we'll get them up on Bandcamp probably the end of next week.
Okay.
And that's Joe's job technically, but he went to America with Madness, as you can
right.
testify to.
Okay. That was my next question was, is it you that is in charge of the Bandcamp? But that's good to know that Joe is
it's
the one
Joe,
in
yes.
charge. I did
well,
not
Joe
know
is
that.
The upload guy.
Okay, because yeah. I was going to ask,
there's
there's a lot of songs that aren't on Spotify or Bandcamp that are, I think most of them are probably from the podcast, like Decisions is one of my favorites. Are those ever going to go up at some point?
Yeah, they will. I mean, to be honest, we will get around. I'm a believer in putting everything that's good enough to get on the podcast should be good enough to be on Spotify.
Yeah.
But they'd sometimes need to be re-recorded and produced again because this podcast is done in such a way where people write it, demo it themselves, and everyone else hasn't had the chance to play in it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of and it just gets thrown out on the podcast because we need to get it out that week. So ideally it's better to set a deadline and we'll spend a few weeks getting it together and playing it properly. And you know, there's loads of really good tunes on that last podcast series, but I think they deserve to be recorded properly.
Yeah.
Also, there's a few of them. There's quite a lot of ones where Alex has just written the lyrics and then we have to make up music on the spot. And it's
yeah,
we can't really release this as music, but this is a funny concept. And if you'd sent us this maybe 2 days ago, we could make it into something a bit more listenable.
Yeah.
So there's that as well. So
yeah.
Like those ones, I'm going to go through when I've got some time after the TV series has gone out.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go through and find those ones that Alex has written where we've just had to busk chords
yeah.
and actually make them into proper songs.
Mm-hmm.
Because, there's stuff in there and there's pointless to waste it.
Yeah, no, please do. Because every time I'm like, oh, I really want to listen to Henry Hoover and I just can't because it's not up anywhere, and I'll just be going around.
Henry Hoover?
Yeah.
What? There must be a version of Henry Hoover.
Nope. I've looked and
I mean,
there's
you,
not.
You'll definitely know better than me.
Yeah. Because I'm.
There's a YouTube version, isn't there?
I'm sure most of the songs are on YouTube because otherwise I wouldn't have been able to do my cover album. Because that's what I had to do for.
That's weird that we haven't got. Henry Hoover up there.
Yeah. Because I'm just
falling through the net.
Well, I'm just going around work, you know, going da 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 da. And people are like, what are you doing? And I can't just say, like, I'm listening to a song.
I think initially with that, we were scared we were going to get sued by the Hoover company. Like, whatever they're called, Newman, I think they're called. But whoever, it's not Hoover, because that's a different company. That's the problem.
Oh, okay.
Because everyone calls that little Henry a Hoover, but Hoover's a different manufacturer.
Oh, okay.
So we were in a tiz about, for ages, we were like worried about being sued. But then we then went ahead and put it on the series one as Henry Mankiewicz.
Yeah.
And then that company loved it. So now they've invited us to go around the factory. So we went to go, when we go to Yeovil, in a couple of weeks, we're meant to be going down early. So
oh
we
my gosh, the factory. That's amazing.
So ridiculous.
So basically what
that's
I'm
the
hearing,
power of TV,
what
basically.
I'm hearing is that you all need to film you guys going through the factory.
Absolutely.
And then superimpose the Henry Hoover song over top of it.
Or to put all the heads and put the heads on, because we've got loads of heads.
Oh
you
my
won't
gosh.
Know this, but like one of our last Edinburgh shows where we did the whole month, we did a Henry medley where we all had a different Hoover, because there's Henry, James, Henrietta. They've all got different names. And we did a whole medley with all of us with the heads on where we did like Henry Eyes. Oh, I can't remember now. Those loads anyway. It's really good. It must be on YouTube somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, that's so funny to me because in the States, we don't have that at all. Like we don't know what a Hoover is or anything, so you
Hoover's a brand name for a completely different vacuum cleaner,
right? But if you're saying like, I've got a Hoover the floors, like, you know, that just means vacuum
but
the
because
floors.
That Hoover brand was so famous at one point,
right,
that was the only one that anyone had. I think
it's kind of like Band-Aid
like
or
50s and 60s
Kleenex, you know.
For Band-Aid for you, yeah, exactly that. So and there's like a Hoover building on the outskirts of London, which is a really famous old factory, a beautiful Art Deco factory. So Hoover's a thing. But the Henrys have nothing to do with Hoover. That's what's so ridiculous. That company's called like Neumann or something. And, you know, it's like kind of... Or Pneumatic is what it's called. It's a Pneumatic Henry.
Uh-huh.
But everyone in the UK calls it Henry Hoover because
how
it is.
That's so funny.
Because it's alliteration, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I love the heads, especially because you can chuck your mouthpiece through the hole and play your instrument.
I mean, when we made that discovery, when we could play with them on, we were like, oh my God.
Game
this is
changer.
Yeah. And then Alex was like, right, I've got to buy all these Hoovers. He was driving around the country and he had this tiny little van. This is like 10 years ago, probably. And then every old broken Henry or James, because they've all got different names. There's a green one who's called a James, and Henrietta's pink, and you know, it's all these, it's hilarious.
It's like the M&M's.
And then he was just going to buy all these broken ones. Yeah. And then we had 12 of them.
Oh my gosh.
Because we had spares and stuff.
Right.
And they were all, they're disgusting inside because they've been used.
Bet, yeah.
They've been sucking up dirt from your carpet.
Right. Gross. Yeah. It's like the marching band uniform nightmare.
Yeah. And we had to walk around with them, like we'd have to walk to the front to play this medley and we'd all have the hooves on, we'd all fall over. It was
right. Classic. Yeah, because you can't see shit out of those.
No, you can't see anything.
That's amazing. Okay, well, that's good to know that I can just bug Joe to put stuff up on Bandcamp or whatever. Whenever.
I think the thing, what I would say is that we did throw up a load of stuff onto Bandcamp and Spotify after lockdown, and it all sounds a bit crap, and as in the production isn't great.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've got so much better at production since we've been doing the TV show.
Yeah,
that we're conscious of trying to make it sound as good as possible now, whereas at that point we were just happy to throw something at any old crap up.
Right. Now, do you have a list of songs that, I mean, I guess you don't, well, you don't, because you sounded surprised that Henry Hoover isn't up anywhere. But presumably...
Yeah, we don't have any list anyway.
Oh, well, I guess I'm going to be making a spreadsheet now.
I think Joe Walker has a spreadsheet of stuff we've played live and anything he's mixed.
Okay.
So anything that's been in a podcast, he does have a list of.
Okay. Yeah, maybe I'll chuck together a list of stuff that's not up yet. And then...
Yeah, there's some that, you know, have only been played once and then consigned to the bin.
Right. But to be fair, some of those, like, we really like to listen to a lot. And, you know, we're always, like, disappointed that they're not up on streaming services or anything that we can listen to them. So
I think the mad thing is that what's happening in the world is now you're better off to just put everything up.
Yeah.
Because people are just used to being able to access everything all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas we're probably a bit older, and the thing was you would save, you know, work towards getting 10 excellent tunes for an album
mm-hmm.
and bin everything else.
Yeah.
But it's just, first of all, it doesn't work financially.
Right.
You know, you're better off just having people being able to listen to stuff 24 hours a day, really.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sort of finally learning that. The whole reason we've got this constant social media presence at the moment is because it's working like that. You just put something up every day
mm-hmm.
and people want more of it. It's like an insatiable appetite.
Right, yeah. Now, we will talk about the social media stuff later because you run all of it?
Yes, but I now have a helper.
Oh, okay. It's not one of the other guys, is it? Just some other...
Hell no.
I can't trust those.
I don't know what I'm doing, but they know so much less than me.
Right.
With social media.
Yeah. That's very funny. All right. Now, I have a few more questions before we get to the games section, and they're not really connected to anything. So, okay. So, I guess, you know, this is technically a Taskmaster fan podcast, so I guess we should talk about Taskmaster a little bit. But So you have been on specifically, I think, twice. In way earlier in series four, you played Midnight with Joe for a live task.
Best day of my life.
Yeah, Joe was saying that you kind of practiced a little bit and then had a few hours break and you just drank a lot and then came back on and was like, all right, let's do this.
So we left. We basically didn't have anything to play. So I wrote some music on the way. Got there, did a run through, it was all fine. Then we were like, right, you've got 6 hours to kill or something ridiculous. Mm. So then we wandered out of the Pinewood where it's filmed and had to walk for like a really long way through a wood in a forest to this pub, which we eventually found. It was a brilliant pub. So we sort of had a few beers there and didn't really eat. And then all of a sudden it was like, right, we have to be back. And then we got lost on the way back.
Oh, no.
And then it still didn't eat. And we were really drunk and it was then we couldn't remember the music. And then they were like, then they had to write down who'd written the music. And we just wrote Ed for a joke. And now he gets all the money for it.
That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, it sounded fine. I, you know, watched it back.
Watch it back a while ago. It does not sound fine.
I think it sounds fine to people that aren't musicians.
Yeah. It's fine. It's what it is.
You got away with it. And then you were also paired up with Ivo Graham in series 15 for the an instrument task. And he made a berry sax. I don't think you had your berry on you. I think you just probably had your tenor?
Well, I think I did have my berry, actually.
Oh, okay. But anyway, so yeah, he made a berry out of like a cactus that he
cactus, right?
Painted gold or something.
he sort of wrapped it in foil.
Yeah. Now, according to Joe, he was pretty much in and out in like 20 minutes for that. Was that the same with you, or did you kind of get to work with Ivo a little bit more?
No, so that's the weird thing. So I know Ivo. Uh-huh. Like, Ivo's done the show many times live, and he's really sound. We've always hung out in Edinburgh.
Mm-hmm.
But the way they do it is I arrived, got taken through it by Andy and Alex.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so I was there for maybe an hour, 2 hours. Absolutely not even 2 hours, an hour and a half maybe. But I literally saw Ivo just for the task, and there was no sort of hanging out afterwards or anything.
No.
And he didn't know, so he walked out and he's like, oh, you. And it's like not even time to even socialize and be normal. It was really odd, that one.
Yeah.
I have noticed that the tasks, they're much more efficient at the Taskmaster house than they were at the start.
Yeah.
They just know how to get through so much now in a day.
Yeah.
The other one I did was with Joe Brand, I think. There's one other episode where I'm playing the saxophone.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of stood against the wall.
Yeah.
And that was fun. That was a whole afternoon of just hanging out and chilling. But that was a few series before, and it was much more relaxed. The Ivor one was like, mate, we run it like the army now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was quick. It was quick. There was no hanging really.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a shame because, you know, it's just, well, that's how they do it. They're so efficient now.
Yeah. I think they record something like 10 tasks a day now or something like that at the house.
It's crazy. And then it was always more like 4 or 5 mm-hmm. before, because they now try everything before Alex even gets there.
Mm-hmm.
And all, the first ones were all being workshopped as they went and stuff.
So mm-hmm.
But now it's like a well-oiled machine now.
Yeah. You recently did a little portfolio interview thing with one of my friends, Tasha. And one of the things you said was, singing is out of your comfort zone. And I have just written down false. Because I think you're such a great singer and you have such a great voice. And when I first was getting into the horn section, you know, I knew that there were 6 of you, and I was like, I just need to figure out who is who so that when I listen, I can tell who's singing. And you were the first person that I was able to recognize based on their singing voice.
I mean, I'm not going to deny that I'm the best singer in the horn section. that is correct. But what I mean by that is I work with so many unbelievable singers.
Right, yeah.
Like in my other band, Soul Family, it's literally, they're like world class, and I've grown up with those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Where they just have, like Vula, who's worked with the horn section a lot before,
mm-hmm.
and Natalie and Charlene are on the Live at the Palladium. They come and do Less Is More at the end in the little choir.
Yep,
those guys. So I consider them singers.
Right,
I'm absolutely fine in musical comedy terms. I'm definitely a good singer, but in session singers in London, I'm not that great. I mean, I think I have got a naturally good voice, and it's just what my parents sing.
Mm-hmm.
And I never really realized that people couldn't sing, really.
Yeah.
For ages. And then I've definitely got so much better while doing the horn section.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you listen back to the first album, all of us sound like such beginners singing on that album. It's amazing to me.
Yeah.
And I think everyone's got so much better.
Yeah.
Will's voice is totally different, especially.
Yeah.
Will, I think Will's a really good singer. He can really find a harmony and mm-hmm. and stuff and stick to it.
Yeah.
I think I've got a naturally good technique, which I just didn't know I had.
Right.
Natalie once said to me, like, you just seem like you've had lessons, and I haven't. I just know how to do it for whatever reason.
Yeah. I mean,
saxophone isn't far away from singing.
Yeah.
In terms of physically what you're doing, it's very similar.
Yeah. But so I think like also
the structure.
Growing up with a musical family probably helps.
Yeah. So they just sang all the time.
Yeah.
I was always just sitting on the floor when they were at band practice doing their little band.
Yeah.
My parents sang in like a 3-part harmony 60s band.
That's cool.
So I just had it around me all the time.
Nice.
But it did push me out of my comfort zone at first. And that Less Is More thing, for instance, I did at the Palladium, I had to redo that a few times
mm-hmm.
for different angles, whatever. And that was genuinely terrifying. I was like shaking.
Right. Yeah, pretty stressful.
Having to keep a lid on that adrenaline, basically, so you got the right level of adrenaline, because mm-hmm. it was just terrifying.
Yeah.
Like 2,500 people. Like, how did I end up here? It was like waking up in a mad dream.
Right, yeah. I mean, it turned out great, so, you know.
Yeah, it was brilliant. I love it.
Yeah.
And the whole thing was, just as I sort of put it, as I was putting it together in the weeks running up to it, it happened, and it was just exactly how we wanted it. It was really good.
Yeah, nice. Do you have a favorite memory from any tour that you've done with the horn section or otherwise?
I mean, I love being at the Melbourne Comedy Festival. We had some really great times there. It was really exciting at that point because we were on a really stratospheric journey at that point where we'd done the little Edinburgh shows. Following year, we did a much bigger Edinburgh show and we got invited immediately to Melbourne, which was the following February. And then we went to Melbourne Comedy. And then we did Edinburgh again. It was a much bigger venue. And then we went back to Melbourne. So the second time we went to Melbourne Comedy Festival, there's people queuing to see us outside. It's like,
nice.
So mad to think that in Melbourne.
Yeah.
You know, on the other side of the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. So that I really loved. Yeah, Melbourne Comedy Festival was brilliant. It's quite often, we've, I mean, we've, basically the last tour we've just finished has all been amazing, really. Mm-hmm. They're all in beautiful old UK theatres. They're all fantastic. But they all merge into one because essentially they're all just these lovely old Victorian theatres.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all fantastic to play in. And
nice.
It's been brilliant.
Awesome.
I think the ones that stand out are then usually a bit more odd. So other ones are, you know, when you're traveling somewhere and, yeah. We need to get over to the States, basically.
Yes, please.
That would be my preferred plan. Yeah.
Yep, come to the West Coast first.
Okay, yeah. I think it'd be West Coast, East Coast, and then home, to be honest.
Right, yeah. That's fair.
I did see the, I think Montreal Comedy Festival is happening again because it hasn't happened for a few years.
Yeah.
And we were asked to do that about 4 years ago or 5 years ago, and then it went bankrupt.
Oh.
Which is classic horn section luck.
Yeah.
Because that would have been a way to get over there, because they would have paid visas and then we could have worked it out. Or they would have paid the part of the travel or whatever. And then,
right. Yeah. That's too bad.
Yeah, we need to sit down and work it out.
Yes. Yeah. Now, this podcast, like, it's a Taskmaster fan podcast, but we also do a lot of stuff with like transformative works, like fan art and fanfics and just any kind of creative thing. Like, obviously I have like my albums and stuff. So do you have like a favorite like fan work or a gift that a fan has given you? Joe mentioned the huge quilt blanket thing.
Oh my God, thing. Yeah, that was incredible.
Yeah,
that thing.
Yeah.
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 I can't remember the name of that person, but yeah, that was, because Joe, it was Joe and I who saw that.
I think
that,
Joe. Is that right?
Yeah, it's Joe, I think.
Yeah.
And we were just, we were selling merch and they'd waited till the end of the night and then just got a bag and they kept pulling out this like reams and reams. And it's amazing, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a few little, there's a few like knitted Henry Hoovers turn
up.
Oh,
that's cute.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
That was good. There was some jewellery the other week, which was nice. Yeah. There's cool. Loads of bits in the TV series, all of that stuff, all of our memorabilia we had, and we just all piled it into the studio, and it's all in the background. There's loads of little
nice
Easter eggs and stuff like that.
That's cute.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, I sent Joe home with, I made all of you little horn section colored keychains, so make sure he gives those to you guys. And okay. Also, my friend who lives in New York did this really cool piece of art, and it's, what's it called? It's like that old-timey cartoon rubber hose, I think the style is called, and it's of all of you, like, as the band, and it's really gorgeous. So they sent me a print of it to give to Joe to give to the whole band, so hopefully you get to see that at some point, but it's really cool.
Yeah.
So be on the lookout for
that. Nick Grayson came in Oxford and brought the tea towel. NATO tea towel. I think this is the original one I've got here.
Yes. Yeah.
Which we've now made. I think that's the original one because it's got more colours on it. And now we've commissioned her to do the actual merch for it. But yeah, that was a great surprise because she came and we were selling a really crap t-shirt and tea towels that just have our names on.
Yeah.
And then she was presented this and I was like, oh, well, this is much better. And then everyone was like, I want to buy that.
Yeah.
And we're like, this is the only one. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to move on to our game section, and the game is quick fire questions. So I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions. You can only use one word answers.
Okay.
Joe, I think, got one in and then immediately forgot that he was only allowed to use one word. It just kept going on. So.
Yep, pans out.
Yep. All right, so here we go. You're at a horn section rehearsal, and the group needs to split off into pairs. Who are you taking as your partner?
Joe.
What's your favorite sound?
Water.
If you could get a tattoo, what would it be?
Horn section.
Soprano, alto, tenor, or barry?
Ooh, what? Alto, I think.
Do you have a least favorite sound?
I don't know, that's a good question. Like a rumble in the middle of the night.
It's terrifying.
Yeah. I'm terrible insomniac.
Ah, yeah.
So when I get like an electrical buzz is what I mean. Like a bzzz, unidentified electrical buzz.
Right. That makes sense. Go to read for tenor sax.
I use the Dario jazz unfiled.
Worst thing you've ever put in your mouth?
Poppers.
Best saxophone player in the world.
Chris Potter.
Nice. Good job. You've done the games section.
Okay, cool.
Cool. Tell me about this horn section tattoo. Because now I'm interested.
So, well, because when we were in Melbourne, we were all going to go and get it done.
Mm-hmm.
And the, so for the Melbourne Comedy Festival, they designed a fresh poster for us and they got some Melbourne design in and it's amazing.
Cool.
The image of that. And they've done posters all around Melbourne. We kept seeing it. We were like, this is way better than what we had in the UK. And then we all decided to get that done. And we were basically booked in to get tattoos as far as I remember it. And then Ben bottled out because his then wife didn't want him to do it. I can't remember the details, but then we didn't do it. And I kind of wish we had.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah. Yeah, because it was going to be, you know, just horn section. It's just really cool, swirly design. It shows up in things occasionally, that design. It's mm-hmm. on the TV show. There's a poster in the background of it. And it's
okay. Wicked. I'll have to keep an eye out for it.
And we've always been, we've tried to find it. We tried to find the designer and no one can remember who it was. It was sort of the different promoter, so we haven't been able to chase that person back. It's mm-hmm. really annoying because it was so great.
Okay, so continuing.
Did Joe tell you about his tattoo?
Yes, plan? Yes, the three ducks.
The three ducks.
Yes, and then he said, yeah.
I love that so much.
Three ducks or three dicks. Yeah, that was funny. Yeah, because I don't remember if he said who made the joke that you should just get three dicks and make the joke that you yes. asked for three ducks. I was like, well, maybe you should get three dicks, but with wings. Like, fine.
Yeah, I think that was also said at the same time. If you remember it being discussed at length. It was a classic post-show drunk
right.
conversation.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, so continuing the conversation. Obviously, we know that the horn section has so many songs. And Joe has said that he probably writes the most songs. Would you say that that's correct?
Yep, probably.
And then I assume you maybe write the second most amount of songs? Or maybe...
No, I'd say I write...
Will?
No, I'd say Will would be next.
Mm-hmm.
Joe and Will are really good at keeping... creating stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I find myself doing admin... in the main,
right,
and tax returns and yeah. practical stuff like that, and fielding emails from people. Joe's really good at keeping himself inspired and writing new stuff.
Yeah,
I've got like a notes thing in my phone of ideas to do.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, I much prefer writing with someone else. So
mm-hmm.
I love it if someone sends me a lyric and I write music.
Yeah,
and whereas Joe likes working on his own. But some of my favorite ones are when we've all been together and written together. Like Chris Hoy is one of my favorites.
And that is my all-time favorite.
That's a Joe concept, which we then all fleshed out because we were on a writing retreat.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it shows in that song that it got better than it was originally, and it became much better. Also, to be fair, Tea's Made and Less Is More is same music. We wrote Tea's Made all together, and then Ben and I sort of did new lyrics for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you remember
I need like a deadline.
Yeah. Do you remember?
I find it hard to write. If we haven't got anything to write for, I find it hard to get down and do it because there's always other stuff to be doing, especially in the horn section.
Right. Did you write Time Versus Persons or was that Joe?
Yes.
You wrote it?
That was me.
Nice. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, that's one I did altogether on my own.
Nice.
Yeah, I like that one. We tried to do it live. It just didn't. It's hard to get it to work.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite song that you've written for the horn section?
I think Less Is More is the best song. Also, I like musically, I like Manifesto,
mm-hmm.
which is an Alex lyric, but I wrote the music for Friends Forever, which is from the first show and the first album. I wrote the music for that one. I really like that music.
Nice.
I think what I'm most proud of with all of it is that I think the music is really strong in lots of the songs.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not just throwaway comedy songs.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite often, like in reviews, you'll get a lot of things like, they're almost as good as the Flight of the Conchords. Like, we're way better than Flight of the Conchords at music. They might be funnier and they've written funnier songs, but if it's just judged on the music, what we're doing is really good.
Yeah.
One of my favourite ones is Sensible Guy, which Ed wrote, which is sounds like Steely Dan.
Yeah.
It's like, there's no need for it to be that good musically. But it is.
Yeah.
That's what I like about it, because it's like, it's interesting musically, as you know. There's a place for just quick fire man with a guitar doing jokes.
Right.
That's a musical comedy, but that's not what we do.
Yeah.
And I just think sometimes it's missed, I think, slightly, especially by journalists, basically.
Mm-hmm.
They would like.
Yeah,
they just listen to either comedy.
I play in a community band with my partner, and I got sick, and so I had to miss the dress rehearsal, which stressed me out. But so I dropped my partner off because he was playing Barry, and I'm like, I'm not gonna let you walk up the hill with your Barry. Like, that sounds awful. So I dropped him off with his Barry. Like, went back home, went back to pick him back up after the rehearsal, and I was playing Fiddly Christmas in my car because it was December, and one of the trombone players were walking out, and he kind of looked at me weird. He was like, what? Because I didn't have my windows down, but I think he was trying to figure out what I was playing, because I guess it was loud enough to be coming through the car. So he like told me to roll my window down, and so I rolled my window down, and he was like, he was listening. And he's like, what the fuck are you listening to? And I was like, I can't explain this right now because, one, I don't have a voice.
Not right now.
But two, it's just like, how do I even explain what the horn section is?
Yeah, where do you start?
But yeah, I definitely agree that there's like the musical quality of the songs are just very, very good, no matter what.
Yeah.
Like being with you, you know. It's just so over the top good. And then you listen to the lyrics and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, they're streaming.
Yeah. So, very good. Now,
I mean, obviously, we're all just actually in a frustrated band, really. That's what this just happens to hang some comedy on it, really.
Yeah.
And also, the beautiful thing is we could play in any style. Like, it's harder being in a band because you're limited to your indie rock or whatever.
Right.
Chosen to do, whereas we can just play anything. It's great.
Yeah. I mean, it's really impressive, especially on the podcast, because whenever Alex is like, okay, give me a jingle for whatever, and you guys just come up with something on the spot, and it's like, that actually sounds really good. You know, it's definitely impressive, which is really funny. But between the TV show, podcasts, live shows, touring with other bands, all of the stuff that you do, what is your favorite and your least favorite thing between all of those things?
Horn section live, I'd say, is the most fun. I love making the TV show because I like having a project and putting it all together and trying to get through to the end of the project. It's nice to have a sign off on it, whereas mm-hmm. the live thing is a little bit throwaway. Mm-hmm. And then live's just really fun. Basically, if you haven't done it for a while, live's brilliant. And then I'm missing making the TV show at the moment because that was so all-encompassing and time-consuming, but we haven't done it for so long. I'd love to be able to do another series because it was really fun. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, least favourite, it's never that bad. I don't particularly enjoy doing weddings, but when I do wedding gigs, I do it with such an amazing band. Mm-hmm. And Soul Family, which is the band I was talking about before. And it's all there. That's with other college, where we all went to college together 20 years ago when I was still playing in that band. What I really hate is when I have to do weddings with a different band, mm. with any old band or pick up band, and it's just not fun at all. Yeah. They take it really seriously, and I don't understand. Because it's just, you play a fucking wedding, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, you're supposed to have fun.
No one's listening, really.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But, I mean, I'm very lucky to be able to do this for a living. That's great.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, definitely.
I kind of don't have any negative thing to say about it, really. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Now, so you mentioned earlier that you get to play in a lot of different genres because all of you can just kind of whip that out, which is really cool and impressive. And obviously you've played with, you know, big names like Robbie Williams, but also in other genres with artists like Bonobo and Disclosure. So is there any genre of music that you'd consider your favorite, or maybe a genre that you'd like to get into playing that you haven't had a chance to yet?
Yeah, actually, I would like to be able to play sort of Irish folk. Like, I'd love to be able to be in Ireland and get my guitar out and play all those reels and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I love that form of socializing and stuff. I love being in Ireland. My wife's Irish.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in a pub in Belfast and people get out their instruments and they all just play and they know what to do and they're always like, oh, he's a musician. So it's like, oh God, I am a musician, but I don't know these rules and I don't know what to play. So I can jam along in the key, but it's rubbish.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't mind actually setting aside some time and being able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I love playing guitar more than anything really now because mm-hmm. Guitar's the one thing I haven't had any lessons on really.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I like it.
Yeah.
Because I'm completely self-taught on guitar.
Right.
And it's more sociable thing because you can sing and play and you can, mm-hmm. someone else can sing while you're playing it and stuff. And yeah, I think I'd like to knuckle down and do some actual practice on Irish folk music.
Yeah. I love a reel. I used to, before COVID, I used to do a lot of like, I don't know if it's called something different in the UK, but a lot of like square dancing and contra dancing. I think over there it's like Kaylee's, maybe. I think I went to like one Kaylee.
Kaylee's,
But yeah, and we had a musician's session on how to play along with some of the reels. And so they had like sheet music and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And I brought my trumpet and I was like, this is way too hard for me to play this.
Yeah.
But also you don't really... You don't hear a lot of wind instruments. Yeah.
No, that's the thing. But I have one mate actually who's a sax player, Graham Blevins. He's an amazing saxophone player. And he met a load of traditional Irish musicians in Martin Offer's band,
mm-hmm.
who then taught him while they were on tour. They taught him the reels and he's learned them on his soprano. And now he goes to play with them. And it's brilliant.
Yeah.
So I'd just spend a week. It would only take me a week, I think. And go away in a course, like an intense course, where you're doing it 8 or 10 hours a day and just do it. Because that's how Joe got his banjo playing together, which is bluegrass stuff.
Right.
But he just went away and did the courses and just practice and practice and practice. And once you've been to one course, you can just then go home and practice.
Yeah.
And it's just about learning the reels. But
yeah,
I do need a little bit of guidance in it, I think.
Yeah,
I've got a really good other mate of mine, Irish violinist Nikki.
Nice.
She can. She's a classical violinist in London, but because she grew up in Ireland, she can take her violin out in a pub in London, in an Irish pub, and play along. And it's like so cool to be able to do that.
Yeah.
I just want to be able to do that.
Yes. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Okay, so moving on to running the social medias. So according to you, you're the only one that is able to do this because everybody else is kind of clueless. So how...
Stand by that.
How do you find running the socials? Do you ever get overwhelmed with all the different like platforms and everything that you have to post
Yeah, so
on?
I don't understand TikTok at all.
Yeah.
So basically, we've now got a new person, Bernie, who's running a lot of it at the moment, and she's brilliant, and she's taken off. Basically, I don't mind doing it every day. If I was just doing it on Instagram, I'd just have to post one thing, that would be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is you have to do it over everything, otherwise it doesn't get the proper reach.
Yeah.
So we've employed, as part of the PR for the TV show, basically, and from Horndal, she set that up.
Mm-hmm.
And helps us through that. So I'm now on the phone to her every day.
Mm-hmm.
And she's absolutely amazing. And she like runs everything by me, and I'll maybe write the text, but then mm-hmm. she just gets it out there for me. So it's worth every penny. It's good. And it's worked. She's taken the reach from, like, I don't know, we had 80,000 views or whatever to like 3 million.
Wow.
It's crazy. What, in only like 6 weeks or whatever, she's been doing it.
That's awesome.
It's made such a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
So the Horndal, did you all just record that in 1 or 2 days, or did it take
just
longer?
One evening, yeah. Oh, no, just gosh. One evening. they're all bits that were going to be in podcasts, and Alex just, you know what he's like, coming up with games. It's weirdly genius.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got, right, I've done this now. I think I've got 100 of them. And we're like, 100? What do you mean? So, yeah.
Oh,
so then we just recorded it, and we just did it really as quickly as possible. And that's why it's so stupid. But
right.
It's a great thing. It's a good bit. You know?
Yeah. I mean, we all really liked it. And I bet the engagement was off the charts.
Yeah. So that's what triggered this great engagement, was that mm-hmm. game, basically.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll do some more of those when we get a minute.
Yeah. So now that
I'm gonna have to go soon, I have to say, TK.
Yes.
So I've got to go and make dinner.
Yep. I only have this one question left, so that's perfect timing. So do you no longer really do the socials anymore now that Bernie's on the team, or do you go through and? Because one thing we notice a lot is that, like, the Horn Section account will like all of our replies, no matter how unhinged they are.
Yeah, I think she's just like replies to everything, because that just keeps the algorithm going.
Yeah.
I'll go through most of it and read most of it.
Yeah.
And if someone's writing a message, Bernie will send it to me to reply. I'm still seeing it all.
Yeah.
She's just been, because she's clipping up the TV show to publicize that.
Mm-hmm.
And then she sends me the clip, and I'm like, yes, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Or isn't there a punchline? Or I think there's another bit that's better than that. And
yeah.
It's just more collaborative now rather than me doing it. It's just all on my own.
Right.
Because it was taking me 2 hours every day, every morning.
Yeah.
To do just social media.
It's a lot. It's
crazy.
Yeah.
I'm like, well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you the one that asked for the plup memes, or was that Bernie? Because
that was really funny.
That was really
funny. I woke up to all that. I was like, what the hell's going on now?
Because we didn't
that's
realize.
That's why I'm enjoying it so much for. Because
we didn't realize like, you didn't, that it was Bernie. And so we're all thinking, like, Mark is out here asking for plup memes. Like, what is happening?
Yeah, yeah. I know. And Izzy, who works for us at Avalon, was like, how do you know about all these memes? I'm like, obviously I don't.
That's really funny. Okay, well, that's good to know. Because, she's now posting, like, thirst traps of you guys. And I'm like, how does Mark know what thirst traps are?
I did know that. And I did post the thirst trap.
Oh, well, you learn something new every day, I guess.
Yeah, so I am. She would never do that without my...
I guess that's true.
Like, yeah, this is definitely a hilarious thing to do.
Yeah. Well, keep posting them, because we love them. But anyway, so...
there's only six photos.
Well, take more, Mark. Tell the lads we need more thirst traps.
Actually, I've got a really good one that's just popped into my head, which I'll post later.
Perfect. Okay, well, I'm glad that I brought it up then.
Yeah.
All right, well, the Horn Section is on tour through June, coming back in September through November. The Horn Section TV show series 2 coming out on May 22nd. The Horn Section podcast part 1 is done and out now. Go listen to that. Are you planning on doing part 2 later this year, the summer or something?
That was the plan, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So keep an eye out for
that. None of that is finalized yet.
Yeah. And then
any other news? We hope to record the current live show on video.
Nice.
On film.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, and then put that out. Hopefully this year.
Cool. Yeah, that'd be great.
We need to get together and get new plans, because we haven't got any plans on that.
Yeah.
We need to work out how to come to the States.
Yes.
and do a
And are you
festival
hall. I know that you tour with like other bands, so are you touring with anyone that's coming to the States anytime soon?
No, I'm not actually. I'm doing a Matt Goss tour, who's the guy from Bross, and I'm doing a bit of Madness, but that's just in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And they've just been to the States, obviously.
Yeah.
It's really hard at the moment because bands aren't that keen on going to the States because Trump's mental.
Yep. How do you think so I feel?
Well, yeah, quite. But, you know what I mean?
Come
to the border and they have to go home, that right. ruins the whole tour. So yeah. it's so risky at the moment.
Yeah.
If you just said Trump's a prick on your social media or whatever, it's like, what is happening here?
Yep.
So all the musicians I know that would be touring the States have been told this might not happen.
Right.
So, yeah. Great. Yay!
Man, I hate it here.
Yeah, God. But, I can only imagine.
Yeah. Well, anyway, please come to the States if you can, because we'd love to have you mm-hmm. over here. And thank you for your time.
Yeah, we'd love to.
And thanks for coming on the pod.
Thanks for having me.
Go yell at the other guys to also come on. Cause...
Yeah. I'll text them right now.
Great. Awesome.
Just invite. Right. Okay, cool. Nice
All right. Thank
nice
you.
To meet you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Once again, that was Mark Brown chatting with TK about Telly, touring, and the other things he gets up to as a musician. The Horn Section TV show is currently airing Thursdays after Taskmaster on Channel 4, and they'll be back on tour next month. If you liked this episode and would like to see more, don't forget to subscribe on your platform of choice.